to America Tonight. My name's Kate Delaney. Hope you're having a fabulous week. Ooh, it's a holiday week. Some of you might, I know I've already said this, some of you might have a very long weekend in store. And hopefully you have a chance to kick back anyway. You're going to enjoy this hour of ATN. Coming up, we're going to have a conversation with Ken Bassinet. He is with Talk Radio News, an insider, truly an insider in Washington, D.C., covering the White House for 17-plus years, and has some interesting things to say about what's going on with the deficit crisis. I mean, one can only laugh. We have talked about this so much, it's ridiculous. Just get us back in the black. Somebody, please. Wouldn't that be a great campaign slogan? I'm going to get you back in the black. Back in the black. But nobody would dare say that for fear that, well, then I wouldn't be able to spend like a drunken sailor the way we need to spend. And what about all the special interests that we supposedly don't have any longer? Yeah, right. Still, it's great to live in America, folks. Why? Because we don't live in Greece. It is a nightmare. As promised, it's gotten so much worse in Athens. Has anyone been to Athens? Beautiful country. They're destroying it. Hours and hours of rioting outside of Parliament. 46 people injured. And we're talking like blood coming down the side of their face because they were smashed with rocks, that kind of stuff. And this is before a vote to adopt more measures because they need bailout money. Otherwise, it's a default. 14 people rounded up. And it was mostly younger people clashing with the riot police 10 hours into the night. Can you imagine? So you go to Athens, you know what you see? Tear gas, smashed up paving stones. This is a piece of history that's getting destroyed. And as I mentioned, I hope that some of you have had the chance to go there because the people are ruining it and why they're outraged by what's happened. Because the people who had the money were greedy and they kept taking the money and more money. So unions had started a 48-hour strike. It shut down all kinds of things. That's why you had the massive chaos and the protests because nobody was going anywhere. More than 5,000 police, they say, are going to be available on Wednesday. And, of course, they will because they know that the protesters are going to be there. They're going to try to block the people coming into Parliament. And, you know, Greece has a lot of problems. And the real problem is the Eurozone. And there is no solidarity. It is a jungle, baby. The banks can do whatever they want, and this is what it has led to. We don't want to see that in the U.S. Trust me. Thank goodness we live in the U.S. And this is a warning to not turn into a Greece, to not let ourselves go down that path. I mean, really, we've already done it. We've done it because we've ignored over and over and over and over and over again the fact that we haven't been balancing budgets. Band-aids eventually wear out. Eventually they do. In the meantime, we've been mentioning the wildfires, and it's worth talking about since we go from the riots and the tear gas and all the nonsense in Greece and what's going to happen in their future to what's going to happen in the future of Los Alamos Labs. I'm going to remind everyone again, when you think of Los Alamos and the Research Complex Center, what are you thinking of? You're thinking of the bomb. You're thinking of the nukes, right? So there's this wildfire that just can't get enough land mass. And it is moving across northern New Mexico like nobody's business. And they're worried now about the potential release of radiation around our main nuclear weapons lab, because that's what Los Alamos is. We're talking 60,000 plus acres. And this facility, I've been in it several times. You know, I mean, you are talking about a mammoth center. It's like 36 square miles, but it's got 2,000 buildings. And this is the place, folks, where you had scientists working on the Manhattan Project that, of course, developed the atom, the atomic bomb. in World War II. It's done. It's been closed because they're worried with the fire. So of all the things that we've talked about in this country, in Nebraska, the floodwaters of the Missouri, the nuclear power plant, the two nuclear power plants, the concern over that, and now we have this situation in Los Alamos. What they're trying to do is they're just taking down all the brush they can from any of the buildings, anything with hazardous nuclear material anyway, and radiation so far hasn't been found above normal levels around the lab, but they're really monitoring this. They're concerned because all it takes is for that fire to jump over, and it's close enough that the county is just smoked. There's smoke everywhere, smoke or fire. And that potential radiation in those canyons, and that radioactive material from the nuclear tests that was, by the way, deposited in the canyons long ago. If the trees in that area go up in flames, I think it releases the radiation into the air because of what's buried beneath there. So then you look at the smoke, and what do you think the smoke would do to people's health? What do you think it would do to their health? I wouldn't want to be there. So they're evacuating a lot of people. 10,000 people had to leave on Monday. There's a place called White Rock. It's give or take 10 miles from Los Alamos. That's a voluntary deal. But then there are other areas where they said, man, you have to go. You have to go. We don't want anything. They don't want anything to get in anybody's lungs. And how can they guarantee it? Who knows the path the fire is going to take, even as they try to control it? They can't be certain of the direction. They can only try to push it in a certain direction, but that is no guarantee. Coming up at the tail end of this hour, we're going to go light on you. It is Stephen Shohet's appearance, our man in Hollywood, so it's always fun to kick it with him. He's a major historian when it comes to anything Hollywood, old school, or even the new stuff. So we'll chat with him. And then plus, there was just this World Expo of tea. I know some of you guys out there are tea drinkers. Get away from coffee. I still got to have my coffee. But a lot of people are tea drinkers. And we're going to talk with Manish Shah about the tea business. Tea making a comeback, both with the tea party and in the sense the kind that you can drink in a cup. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that so many people are trying to find shortcuts or ways to lose weight, that the path cuts through green tea a lot. And then you get in the summertime, and a lot of people will steep their own tea and turn it into cold tea eventually by either they're seeping it, or they're putting the bags outside and they're putting it in one of those giant tea jars. So we'll be talking tea, and not the tea party this time, the real stuff. All that and a lot more coming your way next as we kick the can down the road. Hang with us. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluating. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800, but your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
GCN listeners, why have you been hearing so much about Dermatol, the all-natural, all-purpose first aid spray? Because it's the must-have first aid product you need in your preparedness kit. Dermatol is made in America by Americans who know there's a more affordable, natural way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many other skin problems. Dermatol is gentle enough for diaper rash, powerful enough for bed sores, and harmless to the eyes and mouth. It's great for the whole family, even your family pets. Dermatol is antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, and not diminished by freezing, extreme heat, or years in storage. Dermatol is an absolute must for any first aid or preparedness kit. Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Order yours today. Call 800-217-6677. 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
Every show here in America Tonight, as you know, we go inside the Beltway to our friends at Talk Radio News. Ken Bassinet is joining us now. So excited to have him on the show. Ellen promised he was coming as she's off on her 60th celebration that's expected to last 5 or 6 months. What a lucky lady.
Yeah, and the good news is no one in Africa has declared war yet, so it's probably going well.
Exactly. She was concerned, and that's the same thing I was thinking. What's going on in the Sudan? What's going on in Kenya? She was going to Kenya, too. So a little bit of a break for the hardest working woman in broadcasting. So, Ken, we are pleased to have you on the show. Let's start off with the debt ceiling and what's going on there, the tossing back and forth between the Republicans and the Democrats. It's like a soap opera. Every day something different's happening in Washington. What's the latest?
Well, the White House is actually pretty optimistic, even though last night's meeting between President Obama and GOP Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, GOP Minority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate. He's not going to bend, at least not at this point, in terms of the revenue stream part of it, i.e. some kind of tax, either getting rid of loopholes for big businesses like the oil industry or an outright tax on the wealthiest Americans. But the demeanor of Jay Carney on Air Force One today, I mean, it wasn't an act. He was very much upbeat. And tomorrow the president's going to bring the Senate Democrats over to the White House, and they're going to plot strategy. And, of course, that'll happen just as the same day where you have a news conference. The president out of nowhere called that press conference today in terms of, none of us knew it was coming. And it's clearly just a move to take the message back, to grab the bully pulpit. There's nothing that McConnell can do. There's nothing that Speaker Boehner can do when the president of the United States is standing up there at the podium, obviously. And it'll be interesting to hear what he's saying. In my opinion, it's also a do-over. The president didn't get a bump from the Afghanistan speech. It was too watered down. It didn't give anything to the left. It didn't give anything. You know what I mean?
Sure.
He tried to be. What's Barack Obama's biggest flaw?
He's pleasing
going
everybody.
For the middle.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, it's he doesn't pull it off the way Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton was the same. Had to, you know, they share sort of the same politics, but Bill Clinton could you know make everybody feel like they're getting something. As a matter of fact, you might recall when relations really had gotten so tense between liberal base. President Obama's liberal base of voters and supporters, it was really Bill Clinton who he brought into that briefing room. And he spoke in a calm, very soothing way. And, you know, it drove him crazy. I wrote that lead. You know, they brought in the big dog, you know, to rescue Obama. And I'll tell you, I have some good sources and people that I go way back with in that White House. And, boy, they were ripped at me. And I said, yeah, I know, because I'm in the business of telling the truth and you're in the business of telling the truth slowly.
There you go. I like that.
It's better than calling somebody a liar.
Yeah, exactly. That's a nice way to say it. How about this is something else that came out today. And, of course, you know, if you've covered the White House for a long time and you have for decades, it's like the immigration, anything with immigration, it depends on what president and what time of year it is. And ultimately, there's a lot of people talking about reform and this and that, and then they put it on the shelf. Now Janet Napolitano comes out and says the Department of Homeland Security, we just don't have the resources, she says, to remove, you know, the supposedly 11 million people who are in this country illegally. So, hey, let's go Dream Act, and saying how great the Dream Act would be. And she's kind of carrying the baton now for this. Is there going to be a resurrection of this?
The Republicans have already sniffed it out. It's a political vote. It's not going to pass. This is not the climate for this to work, just like it did the last time. This thing is being resurrected so that, you know, the Latino voters can be reminded that it's been defeated twice at the hands of the Republicans. I mean, unless there is a come to Jesus moment for the Republicans where they basically say, you know what, we've got to do this. Otherwise, they're going to tattoo us with the fastest growing, you know, group of voters, demographic group of voters in the United States right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you saw what happened just when McCain sort of went off the ranch talking about illegal aliens lighting those fires in Arizona. I mean, people were like, what? You know, and it's really a hot potato issue. And it's a mathematic equation for the president right now. I don't believe the president of the United States can win re-election, but I do believe the Republicans can lose and give the president a second term, if you see what I'm saying.
Right.
It's a mathematical equation where, you know, the African-American vote didn't turn out in 2010. We now know that that massive vote was attached to the candidate.
Right.
It was a vote that turned out for Barack Obama, and it's going to turn out for Barack Obama again. Well, if you can cut into that Latino vote, there are going to be states like New Mexico that's going to be crucial. Florida is going to be crucial. Florida's ugly right now for President Obama. You know, there are going to be these certain states that the Latino vote can just put him right over. And that's what this election is coming down to. I mean, really a calculated one vote by one vote kind of election, as opposed to what happened in, you know, 2008 when, I mean, it just rolled across the country. You know?
So that's what David Axelrod and Robert Gibbs, of course, they left their White House posts to do this, to strategize. And that's what they're doing, right? They're going through the votes.
You know, and Plouffe is at the White House, David Plouffe, the campaign manager, is now a deputy chief of staff.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, I was just talking to a very wise colleague of mine who made a very good point that the campaign is up and running in Chicago and is focused on the enemy. They're already starting to pick apart. You know, the candidates do everything they can to focus on how do we play this one, how do we play that one.
Right.
The president is not. Mm-hmm. And my friend actually made that great observation, but then I think he kind of blew it and he pointed out. But he said, unfortunately, the president's not focused on the opposition. I said, whoa, wait a minute. If anyone of our ilk, meaning journalists, you know, I've been a White House correspondent for 17 years, my colleague almost, you know, as long, I said, if anybody of our ilk got wind of the president focusing in this economy, in this world with 2.5 wars going on, you know, and, you know, what's happening in Greece is going to have an effect here, et cetera, unemployment, we would hammer him and say he's not being a president. he is prematurely being a candidate. And, you know, my friend actually agreed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he literally, you know, he basically just said, you're absolutely right. He cannot afford to focus on the enemy. And quite frankly, you don't have to. The media is doing a great job. I mean, what does it take to do a number on this, you know, this bunch of Republicans?
Easy.
Put a microphone in front of their face.
Right, right. And that's what's happening every day. Alphabet soup. You don't know what you're getting. Yeah.
Right.
And you don't know who's declaring.
You're right. I'll give Michelle Bachmann credit.
Yeah.
You know, she brought in Ed Rollins, who's one of the best of the best of the best, old school Republican political consultant, and he's doing his best Harry Higgins. I mean, this is My Fair Lady. That performance we saw up there in New Hampshire, that was different Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah.
Same thing with her speech yesterday. Then as soon as you get her away from the script, she sits down and she starts confusing her John Waynes, you know?
Yeah,
and that
but
was
he's
ugly.
Great. Yeah, 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 but he's great. So as long as she keeps on script with him, you're right. She can be deadly.
Right.
Absolutely.
What Ed Rollins can't do is erase 6 years of videotape that we already have of her saying the American Revolution began in New Hampshire. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a million. The Axelrod's going to have the biggest problem is going to be deciding which videos to use for the opposition advertising if she emerges. And by the way, and you know this, that's who they want. They want Bachmann. Because it's a fight for the middle. And she scares the middle. The middle's sensible. You know what I mean?
Right.
The right's
right.
crazy. The right's angry. And the left.
Who would they be? We have like a minute left, Ken, but who would they be most afraid of, do you think, the Democrats?
Well, I think it would be Huntsman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's so darn sensible, but it's the same. It's the complete opposite. The antithesis of the Bachmann situation. Bachmann can run the table with the Republican primary electorate, i.e., hardcore conservative voters who are going to turn out, and Huntsman can't. He has a tough fight. Yet, if he got through the GOP nominating process, he would be very tasty and appealing, I think, to the sensible center.
Yeah,
I
agree. A lot of people across the country are saying the same thing, not just the Washington set. Ken Bassinet, thank you so much. Look forward to speaking with you in the future from Talk Radio News.
Hey, it's my pleasure. You can check out my work on the Baz File blog, BAZFILE. Just Google it, and I think you'll like what you see, and let's talk tomorrow.
All right, we'll do it. Ken, thanks.
You're welcome.
Are you ready for a mindset tune-up? Hi, I'm Julie Rahm, your mindset mechanic. We're living in a time of adversity and change where we must thrive, not survive. No matter how successful you are, there are roadblocks between where you are and where you want to be. If your career is going great, maybe your body's not fit or your intimate relationship stinks. Take back control of your life with the Mindset Mechanic on WebTalkRadio.net. You'll get the tools you need to overhaul your attitude and rebuild your dreams with the Mindset Mechanic on WebTalkRadio.net. It's smart radio.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite.
Has the whole world gone mad?
What's going on?
How can they do that?
Can Christians have demons?
Why are politicians so detached?
Need answers to these questions? This is Scott Hensor for HardcoreChristianity.com, the nastiest Christian radio show and website in the country. When it comes to the biblical truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God, about what's really going on in America and the rest of the world. Come join us each day as Michael W. Smith of the House of Healing in Phoenix reveals what the churches in America fail to tell you about the true spirit realm concerning demonic activity, mental illness, and even the basis of hardcore evil that is sweeping mankind. Visit HardcoreChristianity.com. Remember, you cannot negotiate with evil. You have to eradicate it. It's not too late. Live in or visiting the Phoenix area? Come join us twice a week for our healing and deliverance services or attend our free monthly seminars. Check website for service hours and schedules.
HardcoreChristianity.com.
9 years, thousands of clients worldwide, amazing results. And here's more proof of the effectiveness of how Heart and Body Extract supports good circulation and healthy arterial flow.
My name is Crystal. I'm a 45-year-old and live in Houston, Texas. I was diagnosed with having mitral valve prolapse 10 years ago. My cardiologist said surgery and drugs was the only thing he could offer me.
What did Crystal do?
I ordered Heart and Body Extract in August 2006. When I first took my first 15 drops, I embraced the formula and could even feel the goodness of the formula starting to work.
Clean, clear arteries are happy arteries after using Heart and Body Extract. Learn more at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. HB Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
If you're paying attention, sadly, you know that Peter Falk, who played Columbo, played a lot of other parts in his long career, too, but died. He was struggling with Alzheimer's, and I can remember as a very, very young kid the Columbo series coming on. I think it was part of that Sunday night rotation where they had McMillan and Wife, McLeod, and also a Columbo, if I'm not mistaken, and that trademark cigar and whatnot. And he played in some other funny roles, too. If you remember Princess Bride, and he was the grandfather, and he was reading the book, The Princess Bride, and a slew of funny comedic parts and some others. So Stephen Shohet joins us from Los Angeles each and every week, and he mentioned to me in a note that this would be interesting to go back and look at Peter Falk, and I agree, especially with that iconic character that he played. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, great, Kate. How are you doing?
Good. Did you watch Columbo when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did. And I watched some of the television remakes, too, and I always thought it was fun to watch, and he was very entertaining. It's hard to imagine that other actors actually played that role, and that the producers, when they had the regular series, wanted to go with Bing Crosby, partly because Bing Crosby smoked a pipe, and they thought he's a detective, Sherlock Holmes smoked a pipe, let's have Bing smoke a pipe. And luckily, I think luckily, nothing
you know, I'm not trying to put down Bing. He turned it down because it would ruin his golf game. And Peter Falk desperately wanted the role, and, of course, he brought new elements to it, cigar smoking instead of pipe smoking, being disheveled, being self-effacing, having his own personal raincoat rather than the clothes that the writers recommended for him, the Peugeot, just every element he brought to it. And it makes you, like I said, not believe anybody else could play that role. In fact, during Columbo's run, Peter Falk made the movie The Brinks Job, and he was on location in New York, and every day this nice older gentleman would show up to the set and would say, "My wife made some lasagna for Columbo." And so finally the crew introduced him to Peter Falk, who was very gracious, took the lasagna, signed an autograph, and the man looked at the picture and said, what's this? He says, "Well, that's an autograph picture for me, Peter Falk." Well, who cares about this Peter Falk? I like Columbo. And the guy ripped up the picture, grabbed the lasagna, and took off.
That's a great story. Oh, wow. And Peter Falk was well-liked, wasn't he? Even among younger actors. Now, he died at the age of 83, and I mentioned that he had been struggling with Alzheimer's. But from what I understand from a buddy who used to work at Fox, that he was one of those guys that a lot of people in Hollywood revered. He was kind of like the wise Buddha. Am I right on that?
Yeah, very well liked, loved it. He loved at parties, not always totally easy to work with. In fact, early on when he was making Columbo, he wanted to direct one of the episodes. And the producers, Lou Wasserman, who was head at Universal Studios, said, "No way, we're not going to let an actor direct." So Peter Falk was very nice, but he said, "Oh, you know, I'm starting to feel a headache come on. There's so much pressure playing this cop. I don't think I'll be able to work." And he quit until he got his way. And for a while, they hired another actor, and they shot him from behind. And then finally they said, "Well, we got to do the close-ups. We got to get him back." So they gave into the directing, and Peter Falk showed back up and he said, "Oh, I heard you hired some other actor to partially replace me." And they said, "Yeah, but we got rid of him because he wanted to direct." And then Peter Falk found out that he really didn't like directing, that it was too much work, and you know, he basically stuck to acting from then on. So he was a social butterfly. One of the things, like you said, since Columbo was only on like every 3 weeks or 4 weeks, that's why he agreed to do it. If it would have been a weekly show, he wouldn't have done it. And he kept turning the producers down, and then they figured out the way to do it with McLeod and McMillan and Wife as well. So definitely he balanced work and play quite a bit, and he had a good time, and he had a lot of Columbo-like characteristics in his personal life.
Oh, yeah. He, Peter Falk, I read something somewhere where he's from New York, originally from New York, and when he was really, really young, he had to have his right eye actually removed because he had cancer. Is that a true story?
That's correct. And it cost him, you know, at first he didn't have confidence in himself, but what really changed things for him was playing sports. He started to get more confidence. In fact, one time he was playing baseball, he slid into third base, he was out, he was sure he was safe, and he actually pulled out the glass eye, gave it to the umpire, and said, "I think you need this more than I do."
Can you imagine?
No, yeah. I can't, actually.
I can't either. Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy.
It's easier to tell than to actually witness, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I think so. So he was famous for Columbo, and there was actually like 69 episodes that ran from, like 68 to 2000 and something.
I think the last year was in the 2000s. Yeah, so he went with it quite a long time, and you know, the directors on that show used to be amazed that he would introduce things to the character that, like, he would say, he would use little props that he would come back to later, that he would ad lib into the story, and also he would do things like if there was something brilliant in the script. Columbo figured out, in order to stay self-effacing, he would always say, "Oh, my brother-in-law figured it out." Just past the you know, credit to somebody else. I mean, that's the thing about Columbo, I think, was so cool, was he was so mysterious. I mean, you never knew his real name, although
sure.
Some people said it was Frank, but, you know, the writers insisted that he had, you know, he would always say, my real name is Lieutenant. I mean, he never got a promotion, even though he's obviously this brilliant guy who solves all these cases. I mean, you never see his family members. I know they had that show, Mrs. Columbo, but on the actual show, you never see that.
Sure.
And so it's almost like he was sort of a mystical character when he appeared on that show. And so I think that's what made it so good. And of course he had the, just one more thing. I heard a story today, a local radio host, actually, his name is Peter Tilden. He was talking about how he used to work at Universal Studios and he was playing his guitar in his office and Peter Falk's office was next door. So Peter Falk came in and said, that's a very nice song and complimented him. And then Peter Falk left and he comes back and says, oh, just one more thing. And it turned out that Peter Falk was really unhappy that he was playing this song and wanted him to quit, or he was going to get him thrown off the lot. But Peter Falk kept saying things like, you know, I could move my office if you wanted to. That's a really nice song. And he kept doing it in the Columbo way. So
right.
You know, according to Peter Tilden, he was exactly like what you got on the screen.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. And he started out like a lot of actors did then in New York, doing a little bit of Broadway before he ended up going to L.A., right?
Right, right. There was a great story that he was driving to this acting class in Hartford, Connecticut, and he was actually an efficiency expert, and he was always late to the acting class. And one time the teacher said, young man, why are you late? He goes, well, I got to drive from Hartford. And she said, well, what do you do in Hartford? Do you act over there too? No, I'm an efficiency expert. She said, well, you should be an actor. And that's what gave him the confidence that he could go forward. And then he happened to get the role in the movie Murder Incorporated. And he became one of the few actors to actually get nominated for the Academy Award after his first picture. And from there, A Pocket Full of Miracles, other films like Robin and the Seven Hoods, The Great Race. And of course, you mentioned later on The Princess Bride. And I really enjoyed the movie Murder by Death, where he plays sort of a Sam Spade knockoff. You know, I thought that was a real fun movie. So he definitely had a lot of work, but he definitely found a lot of time to play, too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Once again, Stephen Showhead joins us each and every week here. Tell him about your blog, HollywoodStories.com, right?
Well, actually, my book is called Hollywood Stories. It's a timeless thing. It's Hollywood Stories, short, entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movies. And it's got over 1,000 anecdotes in it, full of stories about movies and stars and producers and directors. And HollywoodStories.com is the website. And I also write for Big Hollywood. I have a new article about Disneyland coming out. But HollywoodStories.com is the website.
Excellent. Stephen, we'll talk to you next week.
You got it.
All right, Columbo. Yeah, you got a lot of information there. Some great nuggets, I think, from Stephen and talking about Falk's breakout role, you know, with 1960s Murder, Inc. And there he was a killer and a gang of, I guess, thugs would be the best way to describe it. But really how he owned the role of Columbo. Coming up next, Manish Shah. As I said, we're going to talk a little bit about tea. Surprisingly, it's not connected to the tea party, because so much of what we jaw about here on America Tonight is politics. But we already gave you a little bit of that at the top of the show. So we'll lighten the load somewhat and talk about the tea business and also how it's come back and it's not, you know, your grandmother's tea shops anymore, where, not that they're not available, but it's not about that. A lot of guys are drinking tea, a lot of young guys are drinking tea, and tea is really on the rise in the U.S. Who knew? More details coming up.
Hey. energy, energy, and more energy.
We all need it. Get the energy you need quick through the powers of wild forest extracts. Wild chaga and birch bark are the secrets of the forest, used exclusively by Russian athletes. Wild chaga is the world's top source of superoxide dismutase, the critical enzyme that blocks the aging process. Chaga is good for your heart and even helps support healthy arteries. Wild birch extract is the top source of betulin, a natural sterol needed by every cell of the body. And healthy cells mean a healthy body and a more powerful you. No wonder it's known as a king of all herbs. Experience real energy and power like you've never dreamed possible. Take Chago Charge Tea with Wild Birch Bark every day and Chaga Max capsules to get the energy you need.
You deserve it.
Order today by calling 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Most Americans believe famine and hunger will never happen. But what if, day one, mayhem breaks out at grocery stores? Day three, families are on edge. Day five, the neighbors come knocking. Day 10, small bands of thieves begin stealing at gunpoint. Day 15, desperation, but the government can't help because there's no food left. Introducing the Grab-and-Go Emergency Food Supply from Solutions from Science. 84 delicious, nutritious food servings, including breakfast, lunch, and dinner entrees. Enough to feed 4 adults for a week. Every meal 100% vegetarian for longer shelf life. Claim your Grab-and-Go Emergency Food Supply today at foodshortagesolutions.com. That's foodshortagesolutions.com. Or call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Grab-and-Go Emergency Food Supply. Better a year too soon than one day too late.
Are you ready for a mindset tune-up? Hi, I'm Julie Rahm, your mindset mechanic. We're living in a time of adversity and change where we must thrive, not survive. No matter how successful you are, there are roadblocks between where you are and where you want to be. If your career is going great, maybe your body's not fit or your intimate relationship stinks. Take back control of your life with the Mindset Mechanic on WebTalkRadio.net. You'll get the tools you need to overhaul your attitude and rebuild your dreams with the Mindset Mechanic on WebTalkRadio.net. It's smart radio.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Entire life, I was a tea drinker, all kinds of tea in the wintertime, in the summertime. I'm talking hot tea. I like cold tea, too, but really I was a big fan of a cup of hot tea. I still am, grew up with it, like I said. We spoke with Manish Shah just about a year ago, probably. He's got a show called Steeping Around. You can catch that on the foodradionetwork.com. You can catch it on iTunes, too. He's become a big celeb in the tea world. He was out at the World Tea Expo in Vegas. What a place to have a tea expo in Sin City. And I bet it was just wonderful. Manish, thanks so much for coming on America Tonight. It's fun to catch up with you again. What was the World Tea Expo like in Vegas?
Well, Kate, thanks for having me, first of all. The World Tea Expo in Vegas was, aside from blistering hot, they were going through like a massive heat wave. It was pretty fun. You know, the organizer of the show lives in Vegas, and so it's sort of a natural outlet for him to do it there. But, you know, it is a great town to do it in. And I'll tell you, certainly by like Saturday night, you can see some of the exhibitors who are from foreign lands coming in, you know, who, you know, have made their first trip to Vegas. They're a little tired.
All the walking.
All the walking and all the partying, and there's no amount of tea that can solve that little problem.
So what if I imagine there was just all kinds of teas, and this is a wide open question, but as a lot of people can relate to when they've been to any of these big events, you know, you almost get sucked into it when you first walk in a the door of a convention center or a giant hotel, especially Vegas. So what was it that really struck you? What was the most interesting thing that you could pick out of this expo?
Well, it is a big expo, and it's really for the trade only. When you walk in, it's at the convention center in Las Vegas, and it's a huge floor, and it's laid out, and they've got a lot of things from countries of origin, all kinds of estates selling their tea and gadgets and so forth. And, you know, I think the thing that struck me this year the most was we did an interview. It'll show up later on foodradionot.com and steeping around and on iTunes. We had somebody speak. She was from Kenya, and she is the granddaughter of the oldest tea farmer that's still alive. He's 111.
Wow.
And she's just started a tea company here in the States. And so she's bringing her family's tea back here from Kenya. And her interview was, it's both poignant and so true and real. She's an incredible personality. But there were a lot of things, a lot of gadgets, a lot of new things coming out, and just the renewed interest in tea and health. It's not like that's been an old subject. You know, that's been around for a while. But you just see more and more and more emphasis on trying to make tea a part of people's daily lives.
Yeah. And people always wonder, because there's so many different teas, and you're the expert in this. Somebody said to me, it's timely that I am having you on the show. Somebody said to me the other day, aren't there a lot of benefits to tea drinking? Is there really something to that green tea? Does it really help you lose weight? If people ask you about green tea, what do you tell them?
There's no doubt that there's a lot of health benefits. I'm actually in the process of writing an article about that. It's going to appear, I think, in September in Fresh Cup Magazine. But we're doing the research on it, and I already know a lot of it already. There's a lot of health benefits to drinking green tea. There's a lot of antioxidants in green tea, EGCG. And I won't go into the whole long name of it because you can barely pronounce it. But there is so much benefit. And I think the main thing, people go, does it help me lose weight? We have a lot of anecdotal evidence that people say, yeah. We've lost some weight, but why? Well, mostly because they switched from drinking a lot of coffee with maybe cream and sugar in it,
right,
or soda, and switched to green tea, got that little burst of caffeine, not a lot, but a little bit, felt a lot better, felt more stable, felt good, and then we saw some instances of some fairly dramatic weight loss, no question.
Well, all right, I know right now, all of you guys out there with those Buddha bellies, those beer bellies are running out. Drink that green tea.
I wish I could say I've got a little one myself and I'm trying to get rid of it. But green tea is just one cog in the wheel.
I know. I'm there, too. I'm there right with you. I'll tell you, in the next 3 months, it's green tea only. We're just talking about green tea, and we know that there is some popularity to green tea. What are you seeing? What kind of trends are you seeing in tea drinking? Are there other teas emerging that people are really starting to like?
We're starting to see a little bit more interest in what we would call, and I'm using this as like the industry moniker, like functional teas. You know how when you go into the supermarket, you're starting to see like functional water,
right?
You know, water that has all the vitamins and the minerals and it does something. It's not just water. It's got to do something. Well, that's happening to tea a little bit, but it's happening in a way that's interesting. What they're starting to do is take on herbal tea. So that's not just from one plant, Camellia sinensis, which is what regular tea is, but like things like chamomile and, you know, peppermint and things that are like good for your stomach, maybe help you think better, all these things. And the functional element, which is kind of connected to the health part that we were talking about earlier, that's
sure.
Taken off a little bit too. We're seeing a little bit more of that, and I think it's going to be interesting to see where that plays out.
You know, this might seem like a dumb question, but after you brought this up about the Kenyan woman and the fact that she's bringing the tea, her family's tea, to the United States, who are the biggest producers of tea now?
Well, the biggest producers of tea have traditionally been China and India. Now, in this country, we consume more Brazilian tea than any other country because, first of all, it's close, and second of all, almost all the tea consumed in this country, like 80%, is iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our, like, really high-end iced tea comes down from Brazil and Argentina and down in South America. But traditionally, historically, India and China are big-time producers. And what's happening now, they produce really good high-end tea. So what's happening now is we're seeing the fact that Americans, like everything else, we're eating better. We are more conscious of not just putting anything in our mouths. We're starting to say, hey, is this organic? Hey, can I do better with this? I want this very affordable luxury because tea is not that expensive, and they're starting to buy better. And so you're starting to see an influx of teas from India, China, Japan, Korea, and even Kenya, like we spoke earlier.
Yeah. And you can, obviously, tea shops are, and you know about the marketing and doing the tea and whatnot. And so tea shops are, your local tea shops are a great place to go. But you said at supermarkets now, really the aisles are pretty stocked with tea. I think there's an increase in, maybe it's just me, but I feel like anyway, there's an increase in tea drinking. Are you seeing that?
Oh, most definitely. We had a speaker there that talked about the fact that we had gone from something like a $4 billion industry just a few years ago, like 2002, to like $15 billion. So it is definitely growing. It's huge. And actually the growth curve is far exceeds a lot of other beverages. And so we're seeing like a shrinkage in things like soft drinks and in other less helpful beverages and an increase in tea.
So definitely an increase in tea. Where do you, with the, as far as people making tea, it's like the name of your show, Steeping Around.
Steeping Around.
And I know there's someone out there saying, steeping? What does he mean by steeping? And that's the amount that you keep the tea in the hot water.
Well, the
right?
process, yes, exactly. The process of keeping tea in hot water is called steeping. And so when you put it in there and you give it some time, that's what it's called. You're steeping the tea. And so that's the name of our show. And a lot of people are confused about how to make tea and how to make loose leaf tea and all of that other stuff. And I've got like 50 shows now. It's our 1 year anniversary next week talking about all different things about how to make tea, all different types of tea. And we've covered the gamut in 50 weeks. That's for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. And this, we like to call the segment, It's Your Business, and it is your business. Did you think you were, this was what you were going to do with your life, Manish?
Well, certainly not the steeping around part. Like, you know, when I started off in the tea business, I had no idea where I was going to go. But getting all this notoriety, and I wasn't sure that when we first spoke, I was a little unsure about how the popularity of a show about tea would be and steeping around. But it has totally taken off. And, you know what? It's all good. I'm in it for the long haul, and it's turned out to be great. And, no, I didn't think that I'd be here, but I'll be – I wouldn't say that I'm not happy. It's pretty great.
Would you – what about developing teas? What about developing other kinds of teas, which you already are working in that, but is that something that you're always going to continue to work on, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's something that I still love to do. One of the things that we saw at the Tea Expo was like my – you know, like we had the moments of epiphany that we had a conversation with a group of tea farmers from Nepal. Nepal is not a big producer of tea, trying to do more. And they brought this one particular tea, and I smelled it before I tasted it. And, like, the lights went off in my brain, and I thought, oh, my God, this is it. And when I tasted it, I was – they were spot on. So even still today, having tea, still surprising, still love it. So the development will never stop, probably. No.
Do you think, and in India, in the countries you mentioned, like India and China, of course, even Brazil, I think lots of men drink tea. A lot of men drink cold tea, the popularity of tea. You were talking about that. But do you think more American men are getting into the tea thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Big time. And, you know, and it's we're trying to do things more to show that tea drinking is not about the fancy China cups and the finger sandwiches that will never fill you up. It is a very good beverage. You can put it into a big mug, take it to work. It's great for you. Their tea is like yerba mate. And we're seeing that particularly among what we would classify as millennial men, like mm-hmm. the younger generation, 30 and younger. But I think we're starting to see, because I'm not in that generation, but there are more men drinking tea because they're seeing that they're feeling better, they look better, and it's just a great part of their life.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Manish Shah, continued success with Steeping Around, and we enjoyed the visit here on America Tonight.
Thank you so much, Kate, for having me.